Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and WNST.net. We are on Radio Row at the Mall of America. It's all brought to you by our friends at Howard Bank, as well as our friends at Royal Farms and Rofo and the app, as well as the Maryland Jockey Club. Where else would you expect to run into Wally Williams and Bryant McKinney, two random offensive linemen, a decorated guys? I thought you still lived in Baltimore, Wally Williams.
I make my guest appearances. I can't just let the place go. So, you know, I'm always there for Ed Block. I'll be there this year for the Health Expo as well. So I'll be spending a little bit of time
all
there.
Right.
And I got to come back and see the guys play every now and then. So I was there for the Steelers games this year. So, you know, I can't let the place go. But I spend a lot of time now in Scottsdale and play a lot of golf, man.
I got a lot of respect for BMAC because, I mean, Jersey goes down to Miami, plays some ball, and then settles up here in Minnesota where it's 20 below. Right? You live here, right? We're partying at your house tonight, right?
I did.
A long time ago.
Yeah, I did. And
you're just remembering why you wanted to leave.
Dude, what kind of climate is this, man?
I'm glad y'all get to experience this, too, because now you see what I dealt with for 9 years of, you know, with the wind chill is negative 20. It's different, but, I mean, I got used to it because, I mean, I had to be here, so... It's just an experience, though. I'm glad everybody gets to experience this weather.
Was it really different to being like a Packer, where at least when you're out during the week, you get to the car, and you get to the car. You know you can play inside at the end of the week
so
when
that's,
you're here.
That's definitely a great thing here. Only time we really practice outside is if we had to play like Green Bay or somebody who was going to have a climber
similar to this.
Yeah, it's like, all right, we're outside this week. But other than that, we were in the dome, you know, for at least, you know, eight of our games and – You know, so it wasn't too bad.
You know, it's crazy. Wally was playing back in the Stone Age, and so was Tom Brady. I mean, it's unbelievable. How is he still doing this?
I have no idea. And he is the last remaining guy. You know what? Adam Vinatieri is another one. Those are the last two remaining guys that I actually played against.
Really?
In the NFL.
Perhaps?
Yeah. They're the
makes
only
sense.
So, you know, hey, I don't know why and how.
Well, Favre's going to come back.
They, you know. Wow. I mean, yeah. You know, it has to happen. I mean, it just has to happen. But that longevity and to be out there as long as they have been, I mean, look, I could barely get the 10.
Well, look, we'll talk football in a minute. Let's catch up. You're in Scottsdale. You're clearly in Miami or on a boat somewhere off of Miami.
Oh, God. Talking about boats up here, I don't know.
I know. I was going to say, you might want to veer away from that.
Let me tell you what. You have given me on Radio Row the greatest. I use your line all the time. Now, this is serious. You're with us in New York. It's right back from my wife got cancer. You saw my wife went up to you, and I'm like, he doesn't know you had cancer. He doesn't know you're my wife because your hair. You had no idea who she was, right? None. Right. So last time I saw you was in New York. So it was 4 years ago. And we were asking you about being out in New York, whatever. And I said, nothing good happens after midnight in a club. And you said, I've met some great people in a club after midnight.
And I have, and I'm still friends with them to this day.
Dude, I miss you. Can you come back, man? Can you just play third downs or something? I don't know.
Man. I wouldn't mind that, just third down.
Where's your life taking you, Bryant McKinney?
Right now, I have a limo service called My Ride in the app form in South Florida. So West Palm, Broward, and Dade County. So basically, so you don't have to spend the money where you got to do like a 4-hour minimum. You just reserve, almost like an Uber, but you can reserve it ahead of time. And then I have a hangover remedy that's about to come out.
Oh, soon. I needed that Wednesday.
And look, this fits me. So it makes sense. Like, he has a hangover remedy. It makes sense.
It'd kill me.
I got to do things that make sense. And then.
Well, how much do you take? You take a whole pill?
No, it's a drink. So it's a 4 ounce.
Well,
liquid.
Then I need an ounce. If you're drinking 4, because you're 4 of me.
Wait, you're not just taking a couple shots, right?
Right.
They always say that's the cure to a hangover. You start drinking again. Right?
Yeah,
I'm just kidding
that.
For everyone listening.
Well, I would say I need an eyedropper if you're drinking 4 ounces.
And then I'm on a show on VH1 called Love & Hip Hop Miami. It's the first season. So I do a lot of pop-ups on this season. Then next season you'll see me getting back into music and stuff like that. So that's kind of the direction I've been now, I guess, television.
And music's been a passion of yours for a while. You were still doing that at the end of your playing career.
I was. And actually the artist who he was in the group Pretty Ricky, he's on the show as well, so is the group. So that's who I worked with. So that's why next season you'll see it kind of more tied back into me getting back into music.
What got you into music, man? Did you ever play or just love it?
Growing up, I took piano lessons, and I was in, I played in a band like one year.
Can you, if there was a piano here right now, could you play anything on it or not? Camp Down Races?
Nah, I had to go back to beginners and like... chopsticks and stuff like that. I haven't played in a while. And then actually, I'm taking DJing classes at the Scratch Academy in Miami,
too. Your fingers are bigger
than
the keys.
Oh, that's what's up.
I know. Yeah. Right. But I'm into music. I like music.
DJing is the
deal. DJing, it is.
That is the
So I'm in DJing school now, too.
Yes.
When am I coming to one of your parts? I mean, you've always... I mean, look, we're not professional anymore. You know, you're off doing your thing. I want to come to one of your parties in South Beach.
We missed out. We were in Miami for the All-Star game this year. We didn't even think of it.
Super Bowl, I'm going to be in Miami in 2 years, so maybe I'll set something up for them.
That's true.
Well, I mean, you better know me. You know what I'm saying?
I'll get you on the list.
Sorry, you're not on the list.
Just because I'm short doesn't mean you got to look over top. You know, for the ring, and I've had a bunch of guys come by. 5 years.
Yes, five years.
Literally today, tomorrow will be the five-year anniversary. We're putting Ray in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You got little babyface Ray. You knew Ray from back in the day at the U. By the way, I want to wear that bling one time.
The turnover chain.
It
is pretty awesome.
Yeah, almost
it helped a lot, too. Because it made those guys want to wear it. So it was like motivation.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, they would go nuts on the sideline.
Yeah.
Some thoughts about Ray Lewis. You know, your Kemosabe teammate. He played with so many of you because he played so long.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, and Brian was by earlier, and so many everybody sort of shares in this a little bit. You know, and Ray and I, not always on the same page media-wise. He ain't coming by kissing my ass this week. Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting, he ain't in my phone. Mm. Everything about this, everything the Ravens, everything your ring, your early days, everything emanated. No offense to John or, you know, anyone involved. It all really started with Ray. The Raven thing. We might be, no offense, the Cardinals or the Jaguars or whomever. Any without Ray, right, Wally?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, look, when we made the move from Cleveland to become the Baltimore Ravens, we were a team. Not only without a mascot, but without any kind of marquee player, superstar player, nothing for you to hold on, because you guys remember, Andre Rison and the Pepper Johnson, all those guys like
priced
that
out.
They were
gone. So we came back and finally settled. We didn't know who was going to be in that locker room. And you go out in the draft, you get a Jonathan Ogden, and you get a Ray Lou, which I think is fire and ice and was the perfect combination to build a program on. And Ray came in with the kind of established leadership, even as a rookie, that we actually needed. Now, we had a veteran kind of team as well, so there were a mixture of guys like, we want the rook to shut up. But that rook was the best guy that we had on the defense. Oh. And you know what? He showed up every week.
Yeah, you wanted him to shut up until about 1 o'clock on Sunday, and then you were real glad they drafted 52. We came close to drafting a running back named
Leland McElroy.
Exactly.
Texas A&M.
That was the other guy, because we needed a running back. We didn't draft Lawrence Phillips, remember?
Exactly.
We had EB, who was 100 years old.
Exactly.
Well, yeah.
We wanted a running back as well. Don't get it wrong.
Sure.
Okay, here's another thing. So we're sitting up on the board at the draft party for our first Ravens draft.
Oh, you were at the Sheridan that day.
We were at the Sheridan.
I was broadcasting.
We're sitting there.
I was broadcasting that day.
And they are making a move, and we were thinking they're going running back. Okay, so I'm sitting next to Tony Jones. Okay, I'm sitting next to
he's thinking, where the hell am
Orlando I Brown. I'm sitting there, okay, and they said, bam, we're drafting a tackle, Jonathan Ogden, number 4 raw. So we immediately look at Tony. Okay, and he's like, he has broke out into a sweat. So what's going on next with your position?
Oh, gosh.
But what really happens is,
and T-Bone had already beat death.
Exactly. He comes back from that. So what happens next is that Terry Marshall Broder comes on the screen and says, hey, we're going to keep Tony Jones and move Jonathan Ogden to left guard. So, really, the reality who was benched was me. And I had to move from left guard over to right.
And Steve Everett was there.
And Steve Everett was at center, and Orlando played right tackle. So, that year.
Ogden started out at guard?
1 year.
There you go.
I never knew that.
You never knew that.
The whole season at guard.
Joe played his entire rookie season at left
guard. And he taught him everything he knew about guard.
There you go. There you go. There you go. That's how it worked.
You know what? The dumbest phone call I ever had from a caller was back in 1998, 99. Guy calls up. and we still stink, right? We're no good. Right. You were in New Orleans by then. Guy calls him and says, you know, they drafted John Ogden, and I don't know what the hell they were thinking moving him from guard. He was a fine guard, you know? And I'm thinking, we still have some educating to do here. Exactly. In Baltimore, hey,
you know he was there. But, you know, like I said, you know, about Ray and you know, Ray was a little overmatched when he initially got to Baltimore, at least dealing with us. We were a rugged group of guys, our offensive line. Yeah,
nobody was happy to be in Baltimore. I'm not being mean, but, like, there were a lot of guys with a lot of bad feelings about David and about the move and about Baltimore.
All of that.
I mean, wearing the Mean Machine uniforms you talked about. They had white helmets with a black stripe. They looked like they were in prison.
Look, Steve Everett.
I'm learning a lot today.
Oh, yeah. Steve Everett, would come to practice.
Google right now John Ogden 1996 football card.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Look at the picture of John Ogden's football card. Yes. In 1996, he looks like a member of the Penn State Nittany Lions in an NFL uniform because they didn't have a logo.
Nothing.
They didn't even have permission from the league really to move because they still had the leasing problems in Cleveland.
And you had
they
guys
had to do
like,
a little bit of this.
You had guys the Steve Everett of the world and you know, Tony Jones at times who were loyal Browns.
Oh, yeah.
And Steve, our very first game as a Raven, had a brown bandana up under his helmet.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and that's
Steve still hates the Modells and they're all dead.
Right, right.
You are being honest.
That's what it was. But
that's probably from OTAs, 1996.
That's how we look.
That's crazy.
That's our first practice.
Marvin Lewis's first practice in Archibroda.
That was our first practice right there. Rookie camp and everything after the 96 draft.
The first hat we had in history that John wore, I own it. John took it off his head and handed it to me, coming off the riser in 1996. Mm-hmm. Eddie Carroll was there.
Yeah, yeah.
And the phone, the bat phone, if you go back, watch any of the video of John Ogden, every table had a helmet phone, right? Remember that? Our helmet phone was white, and it was a black strip on it. It said R-A-V-E-N-S, and it was just on it. That was our... April 19, 1996. We've come a long way.
Somebody may even have a Baltimore Browns hat.
Baltimore
stuff
Browns.
Somewhere.
There was some of that stuff.
Because they didn't know what the
pirated,
logo was going to be. Right, right. But that came up somewhere down the line. But even with all of this stuff going on that didn't have anything to do with football, this young 5'2 guy, okay, just wanted to come out there and knock your head off and ask you, what other ways can I figure out where I can get that done? And I think that's probably one thing that was different from practicing with Ray, is that he would do something, and you would get him. He'll come to you after the play and was like, hey.
How did you know that?
How did you know to do that?
Yeah.
What did you do? What? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what you're doing is looking at me and trying to guess where I'm going. What I'm going to do is I'm going to look this way, but I'm going to run that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you better get on your keys a little bit better. And that's what he would do.
Film.
Watch it, study it, get in there and get it straight. And that's why he became what he is today. You saw that brewing as a rookie, if you were paying attention. Because as offensive linemen, our group, he would chastise us every day and figure out how do we get our hands on him. He did not like that. You can attest to that. He don't like that.
To avoid
he was with Ray at the end of his career, right?
Yeah. Okay, so that was what it was as a rookie, that he was going to figure that out. And what was his comment? Like, hey, you give Jordan his weapons, right, and let me do his thing. Let me do my thing. And, hey, he did his thing.
B-Mac, when did you meet Ray Lewis for the first time?
I met him sometime, and I think I was in Minnesota still.
But you never met him at the U?
At the U, no.
No, but not, you know, you guys were both in the league.
I don't remember meeting him at the U. I might have, but I don't really remember. But I know I was in the league, and I came to something for Willis McGahee, and he was there, and Ed Reed was there, and I met him then.
Each
other. And then that's when I first met him, yeah.
Did you reach to him before coming up? Did you know him well enough? I mean, there were a lot of guys from the Canes on that team.
Yeah, did I reach to him when?
To come to Baltimore.
He reached to me. Like, soon as I left from here, from Minnesota.
He recruited you.
He did, and he actually act like I didn't have an option. He's trying to bully me. I'm like, wait a minute. So listen, I just got to Miami.
I remember
Let
that.
Me get a day or so, like try to figure out. I got to look at the roster. I don't know anything about the team.
Come on, dog. You got to come to Baltimore.
Michael Orr's here. Like, he want to move over? Don't worry about it. I got this part. And I was like, okay, because I forget his name. The linebacker, he from UM too. from UM. He was the linebacker, but he got traded by the time I got here.
Tavares Gooden.
He's the one who reached out to me first and said, "Hey, Ray Lewis wants me to give you wants your number. Can I give it to him?" I was like, "Yeah." And then Ray hit me up immediately and was like, "Bro, you need to come here. You're the missing pieces and the other." And I was like, "Okay, let me check. You know, I got to see.
Let me test the waters elsewhere.
Let me miss a couple of days of training." All right, so let me just look. You know, see if I'm a good fit there. And then he hit me. Then he had Ed Reed. Well, Ed Reed hit me. He's like, "Bro, we might as well link back up, try to get a championship together." I said, "That does sound good." I said, "But tell me about the team." So then I was looking at the team. I said, "It could be a good fit, but now I got to see how Michael Orr, if he's okay with moving, because I don't want to play right tackle, because I've only played left my whole life."
Right.
So I don't know how effective I would be playing, learning to play right in the middle of a season. And then Ray was like, "Oh, no, don't worry about that. I already got that taken care of. This and another. You need to tell your agent." And he's like, "All right." And then Ray just was hitting my phone a lot, like, "Listen, this is what it is." I was just like, "This must
so
be."
So he really is the reason you came to Baltimore.
He is the reason. He had everything done on that side of Baltimore already. He started telling me, "You need to talk to your agent and get this moving faster." And I'm like, "What's everything?" He said, "Yes, I got that taken care of." I'm like, "Dag, like."
Who was really the GM?
Right,
for the
Rams, right?
You know, it was the same thing he did to Deion 10 years earlier.
Right.
You know, same thing with Woodson and Sharp. I mean, you know, the recruitment for Ray and Rod sat here, and, you know, all the players that have played with him, Bart Scott's with him, they all came over. You know, Bart Scott, you know, Eddie Hartwell, all those guys got their bones because they played with him. You know, they went other places and had mixed success, but I think it really speaks volumes. There's nothing you could take away from Ray. Atlanta notwithstanding, on a football field, no one has come here and shot any holes in Ray Lewis's Hall of Fame candidacy.
Yeah,
none. Zero.
I mean, look, he's always had that infectious mentality. Mm-hmm. You know, it sucks you right in. Mm-hmm. You want to play with that kind of spirit yourself. And if you see that resonate with somebody like that, you're going to gravitate to that. All right? And, you know, that's
honest,
what Ray
you know,
is.
Every week, you don't always feel your best every week when you're going out there.
Right.
But after listening to his speech, you'd be like, "Well, okay.
Let's go. We good now. That's all I needed."
Right.
You know what?
You need a little pick-me-up.
Here we go.
Hang on one second. Now, I'm going to ask right now, and you don't have to demonstrate, but we do have a video camera.
Uh-huh.
Have either one of you done the squirrel for real or in a club or after, let's say, 15 drinks for you?
Or do you have a good impression of him doing a pregame speech?
Yeah,
that would be good too.
Well, look, now see, he may have the pregame speech thing. He wasn't really able to do that in during my time because, like I said, we had other guys there.
Yeah.
He was hovering.
Yeah.
He was waiting on his chance. Okay, and every now and then, see, E.T. Eric Turner,
the late great
Eric Turner would say, "Hey, get up in there, Rook, because this gonna be your deal." All right, when everybody else is going out of here, so. He was kind of getting them in the mix, and you can see it bubbling up because he wanted it. Mm-hmm. Okay, he wanted to be that focal
Remember
point.
Remember when he came out
person.
With a train?
Oh yeah, yeah. Then I heard some
1996.
There you go,
the train.
I heard some vests in the back said, "Put that damn thing down." See, I mean, that was always the undercurrent until he got it, and by the time he got it, it was gone, and everybody was on board.
So you've never done the squirrel. I want to see you, the big man dance.
The squirrel like is the dance, 90s. It's a Florida dance.
So
have I done the squirrel? Oh, yes.
Yeah, I've done it too.
Yes.
Like, we used to do it in the locker room in Miami and stuff. So we know about it.
I want to see a man of your size do the squirrel.
Every cat from Florida can do the squirrel.
Yeah.
Okay. If you grew up in Florida from 1985 to about 2002,
yeah.
You know how to do the squirrel.
Yeah.
Because
I learned
Florida
in 99.
Thing.
Well, I would love for all of you former teammates that are going to meet us out in Canton in August to honor Ray. I'd love to see a group squirrel with
That would be
hilarious.
Players.
Kind of like the Foo Fighters tribute, right?
Yeah.
In Europe with the drums, right? Like, let's have everybody do the squirrel.
Oh,
you know?
We can get that going.
No, we could. We could.
That
we
would
that
be
going.
A great, great tribute to Ray.
Would.
Oh, yeah, we can get that
Video
going.
Video that at the after party, clear the floor, and just have everybody.
That would be great, yeah.
That's what I think. That'd be the ultimate tribute to Ray. All right, man. Super Bowl here. Any chance Eagles going to win this thing for all of us?
They got a chance. They're here. Yeah.
This is my thing. I think I feel like a lot of the teams that play against New England is when they get in the fourth quarter, they get into a let's try to hold on to the lead mentality instead of keeping your foot on the gas. And once they have that mentality, and then say if New England scores, then they get nervous, like, oh, here we go.
Can't
and it's
it
like
out.
You got to just keep going and keep going, what you've been doing the first three quarters, and not get into a whole let's play safe and let's just hold the lead type of thing, because he's going to slowly start picking away, because he's sat and watched for three quarters what it is you're doing, and now he's going to expose everything and he's going to catch up and beat you. So you got to just still have that aggressive mentality, where I feel like a lot of teams kind of let up off of being aggressive and now it's trying to be like just safe.
See, I think Philly has some kryptonite there. And they can play the same kind of way that the Giants play. Mm. They can put pressure on the quarterback front with four. Okay, and that's it. Mm-hmm. All right. And from what I've seen with the Patriots offensive line, they are average at best. So if I want to look at what's going to happen, look at the Giants.
Well, Brady's going to get rid of the ball quick. We know that.
Well, but
he's got to get that inside.
He may not have anybody to throw it to.
Right.
Because I don't think their receivers are guys that can really get away and get space. They're smallish guys. You know, Hogan is their biggest receiver, I think, and everything after that is Gronkowski. But I think if they get pressure on Brady and make him uncomfortable with just four, you're going to see some New York Giants stuff where they're not able to move the ball like they usually do. And they're going to have problems in the red zone. We can play in the perimeter all day. Mm. But getting into that red zone and scoring points and scoring touchdowns, they could not do that against New York. And this is what the same formula may present them if the Eagles can put pressure. And they go deep. The Eagles are like, you know, like eight deep.
Right.
With D linemen.
Oh, yeah.
And they can put pressure on the quarterback. So we're going to see about that.
A lot of rotation.
Yes.
Anybody that questions the intellect of old football players, you live in Miami, you live in Scottsdale, and I'm going back to Baltimore. Something very wrong here. Very, very wrong here. Wally, love you. Appreciate you over the years, as always.
It's a pleasure.
There with the Mean Machine. Brian McKinney will teach you a little purple history, which is good.
Definitely did.
So I bring the sage old
guys. I didn't
know
I would ride that train either.
Hey, it was
a. Let me learn some things.
Right.
You know?
It was a big deal, man.
And Brian, such a difference maker in our championship team. I thank you for your partnership all those times came out and did radio with us.
Oh,
and, we appreciate
no
you, man. Thanks for coming over visiting.
Thank you for having us.
B-Mac and Wally Williams joining us here. It is all brought to you by our friends at Howard Bank and Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast, and the Maryland Jockey Club as well. We are on Radio Row, Minnesota, at the Mall of America. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore sports.